everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, there is some rain still in the forecast, right? About 20%?
Sunday night, Monday is the prediction.
I have a feeling it won't happen.
Oh, who knows? Well, the National Weather Service says there's a 50% chance for rain Sunday night.
Then I'd really be going out on a limb, wouldn't I, and saying it's not going to happen. It's Buckmaster, and I know it is going to happen because it is happening right now, Buckmaster, on a Friday. It is October 21st, 2022. We're in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. Our radio station, 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening, all of our podcasts available for you, and the live stream at buckmastershow.com. All of our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On Friday, a big shout out to our media friends, TucsonSentinel.com, big supporter of our program, as is the Green Valley News and Sojourita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group, and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. We're also very good friends with the Arizona Daily Star, and Star columnist Tim Steller is with us, 2022 Arizona Newspaper Association Columnist of the Year. And there was a week or so ago, there was another contest, and you won Best Column. Is that a different kind of thing than Best Columnist? First of all, good to see you. Hello.
Well, I don't know. Let's them all into one thing.
We'll just say highly honored Tim Steller.
I just want to mention, Bill, you know what that column was?
No.
That was my column about the new Taco Bell at Speedway and Campbell.
You know,
out of all the things I've written about.
Was that Tucson Moss or something? What was the title?
I said Tucson fails to live. This is the headline. Tucson fails to live Moss at Speedway and Campbell. I can't remember, something like that.
I want to say serious work, not that this doesn't have a serious piece to it, but all your serious work, this is the one that caught the judges.
And you know, I kind of relate. I actually, in retrospect, I kind of feel like that was my best work too, because it was fun.
Okay.
Fun, but serious. It was like, come on, we got to do better than that at such a big corner. That was essentially the point of that column.
Anyway. Well, congratulations.
Thanks, Bill.
Chris Nanos is with us, the Pima County Sheriff. We haven't had Chris on in a while, so there's a lot to catch up with the sheriff on. Sheriff, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
This is really, you shared with me before the show, we've had three straight domestic violence homicides in town. There was one last night.
Yeah, I'm speaking strictly for what our agency's dealt with, but yeah, probably in the last month, our last three homicides have all been domestic violence, and this is
domestic violence awareness month. Awareness month. That's why you're wearing a purple shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, whoa.
Yeah, it's violence in and of itself is tough enough to deal with, but now we take it to the homes, and it's really sad. It's tragic that these stories come to be.
Sheriff, what's the overview on your staffing situation? You have positions, you're authorized for 1,500 individuals. That would involve not only deputies out on the street, but in the jail situation.
Correct.
Where are you right now?
So, you know, our numbers today are 1,280 some.
Okay.
When we came in, we were at 1,301 in 2021. And what happens is we've been able to hire deputies, probably get 30, 32, 36 at an academy. But those academies take 10 months. The whole training process is a 10-month training process. So we don't even see those deputies until 10 months out. With the attrition rate of 1.8, that's basically one a week. Mm-hmm. In that 39 weeks of academy, you've lost 39. And if you're only hiring 30, you're down every time.
Yeah.
We have employed some strategies here that of recent, one, a positive thing.
Yeah.
For the first time in the 2 years I've been on, we now have seen 90-some candidates. That's a big number for us, because we just weren't getting that many applicants. But 90-some applicants who have passed all the process and we'll be able to hire them. Now it's a little bit competitive, right? Everybody's looking for people.
Everybody's hiring.
Sure.
And I don't know what you guys pay or what your competitor, are you pretty competitive?
I hope we are. The county's doing a study on that as we speak.
Okay.
And hopefully here before the end of the year, we'll hear more about where we're at and being competitive with across the state. But the issue for me isn't so much pay. It's about getting these young men and women hired as quickly as we can, because it is competitive. And this is a long, lengthy process with background checks and things of that nature. So when we start the process in June, they're not actually in the academy until February. So you're a young man, young woman looking for a job. I'm going to take the first thing that comes. And so we're now starting to see a way to get, because corrections are even in a worse state. Their attrition rate is 4. That's just
trying to fast track the people.
Yeah. So we're going to get these kids into deputies to be coming into our correctional facility, because there are some skill sets there that we could gain a lot of value on. I started there. A lot of our
staff. You started in the jail?
Correct. Hmm. So we hope to get these young men and women hired by November. And then when the academy does start in February, we can roll them into that. So,
all right, Tim.
We're looking a little bit up, but we've got a long way to go.
Tim Steller.
So, Sheriff, are you more understaffed in the jail or in the policing agency?
Yeah, no, definitely. So we have our jail and commission, the street cop, definitely the jail. They're down about 120-some people.
Out of what's the total there?
Well, 300 and they're actually just right about 400 is what they should have.
So what ends up happening in the jail? That is, how do you deal with not enough people for, I'm sure, around the same number of inmates?
It is tough because we've opened it up for overtime, of course, and trying to get more people to work longer shifts. But that gets tough and tiring, too. We've also, since we have so many of our deputies in the field who were former SEALs, we've offered them a chance to come and work overtime there. That strains your budget, I get it, but we have a job to do and we need to make that jail safe. If I get put on you a mandate that says you need to make rounds, see each inmate in your pod, that's 70 some inmates in some pods. Some pods it's over 200. You need to see each one of them every 15, 20 minutes. Mm. That's tough. That's all you're doing. I mean, if you could. And so that's not a realistic measure, especially when your staffing levels are low. So we put some challenges out there for these young men and women that are just impossible to beat. What we see from that, if you're not making those rounds, is the number of attempts of suicides starts to climb. So we struggle with that balance, but we're getting some people in there, and we're hoping that by getting an infusion of some 50, 60, 70 deputies in there, that will help allow the actual correction officers to go do their jobs as correction officers.
So, Sheriff, you mentioned suicides. That brings up the issue of deaths at the jail, which have been on a strong increase for a couple of years now.
So can I ask you, why do you say a strong increase?
Because they were a few per year in the period before about, as I recall, 2019 or so.
Let me give you some numbers, and then I know the media's been on this.
Let me interject. 17 jail deaths in the past 2 years.
2 years.
Go ahead.
Let me say, we've looked 20 years back. I imagine we could look 50 years back. But for the last two decades, the average total number of deaths in that jail every year is 8. So you got 2 years there where we had 17, one more than the average. And would you look at last year, we had 10, the highest total ever, 10. Yet half of those, 5 of them, were from a pandemic that wiped out over 1 million people on this planet. We do as everything, every day we are looking at ways to minimize risk to those inmates. And I'll give you an example. First of all, the young men and women who work there, there's more life-saving measures go on there than people even hear about. They don't hear about the guy who went down and booking and somebody came in and gave him Narcan 4 or 5 times and transported him to hospital. They don't hear those stories. But the deaths are to people, it's a population of individuals who come to us not from a doctor's office, They suffer from substance abuse, chronic abuse, substance abuse, health issues that are beyond what you and I see in our normal lives. And we look at the detox period. You know, we're all about budgets, right? And we got to be budget conscious. When I took over that jail, the detox room for coming in, those first 72 hours are critical, right? So you put somebody in there, and we have like four beds with 1,800 inmates. We have redesigned that. We actually went out and said, hey, come and tell us what would it be to build 40 beds, $34 million. It's just, we can't do that. So what we did is we have what we call the fishbowl. And it is a area where we put inmates in. It's all glass, you'd be seen, but they're not isolated. You have other inmates in there to keep an eye on them, really. I mean, help them. But they're in this fishbowl with medical staff right there. That was not something that was going on. We have spent $400,000 on a room that we call non-ligature. So you can't commit suicide. You can't. There's no anchors to hang from. But that's just one pod of 29 that I've got to do that with. Then you have our canines. We're the only jail facility in the state, maybe even in the nation, that actually has fentanyl sniffing dogs in our facility. And we're looking at getting two more at a cost of about $20,000 to $30,000 a dog. We put electronometers, so the what you see at the airports, two of them in for $125,000. It is every single day we are looking at how do we do this right? How can we make this a safe environment? Because it is a tough job. But one of the things, just next week, we're meeting with a consultant from a National Correctional Institute to come out and talk to us about, take a look at what we've done. They already looked at our medical facility and the medical team contracts that we contract with and gave a good review for them to say, give some ideas to, and we'll listen to them as well.
Go ahead.
One death is bad enough. Mm-hmm. We're not going to give up. We're going to keep working to get to zero deaths.
So are you saying it's not basically not an unusual number of deaths?
No, I mean, I would say we've looked at what is El Paso doing? What is Albuquerque doing? What is Phoenix doing? Man, counties and cities and jails our size, and we're Arizona State Prison today, 1,100 deaths, and that's today, for January. Yep. For last year, 1,100 last year. So so far from January to this day, they're at like 70 some for this year. I can only imagine what they're dealing with, a large volume. Mm-hmm. But Maricopa County, El Paso, Albuquerque, all those areas around us that we looked at, they're in the same boat. In fact, they're actually a little worse off than us.
So there is one particular case, the death of Wade Welch, that has come up as a particular issue. The video came out showing what I think for most people would be a disturbing scenario. And what was strange about it to me was seeing the one deputy trying to ensure that it was all caught on video, like for documentation purposes. And yet still it went wrong, obviously. What's the status of that investigation?
So that investigation, as you know, we've done our Pima Regional Critical Incident Team where we step aside.
Let me kind of just let the listeners know in case they haven't followed that closely. Right. This is the death of 37-year-old Wade Welch. He died in custody last summer in the Pima County Jail, and he was tasered. And Pima County Attorney Laura Conover, who is scheduled to be with us next Friday here in studio, yesterday had a news conference. She said that the community has significant concern over this. But as you were just going to say, Sheriff, that the Pima County Regional Critical Incident Team is investigating.
Yeah, that was something that I set up with all the chiefs in the valley to say, hey, we do need some transparency when it comes to these critical incidents, an officer involved shooting, something at our jail, and we step aside and allow the other agencies to do their investigation. So it's unfair for me to make any real comments about this because that is still under investigation. I believe it's TPD. Chief Casmar and them will be presenting that case over to the county attorney. I actually, this morning, saw Laura's comments, and I'm sorry. I think that was inappropriate for her to make those remarks. You cannot comment as a prosecutor on a case that you don't have any facts in front of you yet. Let's get the let due process exist.
Would you have rather just had Laura say we're investigating it at this point?
That's, to me, her position should have been, I don't have the facts in front of me. When the Pima Regional Critical Incident Team will develop that investigative effort, present those facts. I think they're close. I believe probably in
a
week or so.
They'll present that to her.
And then she gets to make her decision. Once she sees that and can make that decision, then she can comment. But it's completely inappropriate for me or anyone else to comment on something that I only know bits and pieces of, especially something like this.
Tim, I don't know if you had a follow-up on that,
but
we do need to talk about, and gladly so, take a break right here and talk about my favorite bakery in town, Sheriff. That's Mona's Danish Bakery. Could you go for something like that from the bakery right about now?
I'm a little surprised you don't have any of those.
The bakery goods?
I brought in
a loaf of their rustic bread yesterday from Mona's, and it went very quickly. So nothing today from Mona's, but they are open right now for lunch. They open at 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday. They do a great breakfast. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. If you were at Mona's right now, Sheriff Nanos, what would you go for? What type of pastry? What do you have in mind?
Anything with sugar in it.
Like a chocolate croissant would work for you.
Oh, my goodness. I am so bad.
Tim, what about you?
Sweet.
Yeah. Let me see. I'm usually a Kringle man, so I'll just stick with the traditional.
Okay. You stick with a piece of the Kringle. All right.
No, a whole Kringle.
Oh, the whole Kringle. Okay. Usually serves about a whole family. It could do 4 to 6 people. But anyway, they're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. More with Tim and the sheriff right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview today. Chris Nanos is here, Pima County Sheriff. Tim Steller, Arizona Daily Star columnist, had a very interesting conversation during the break with the sheriff. And Sheriff, when you applied, you came over from El Paso in 1984 to apply for the Pima County Sheriff's Department. You were one of how many?
1,700 applicants.
1,700 applicants. And now you rejoice.
When we get 90-some. I mean, it's just, yeah, it is, it's just different times. But we have to adapt, right? You have to work with what you've got. And it's not about lowering your standards. It's about getting out and finding and recruiting the right people. And not I think before you could put you didn't even need the radio. You just put something out on your window of your house or your car or your business saying, we're hiring, and people showed up.
Yeah, it's a shortage of hiring everywhere.
Absolutely.
Tim, did you want to bring up the constable situation?
Yeah, sure. Sheriff, what are you thinking about that? So the constables, my colleague Nicole Ludden reported last weekend or the weekend before that they were down to 3 or 4 out of 10 positions that were actively, in which Pima County constables were actively working, serving court papers, you know, orders of protection and the like. And what are your thoughts about that office and the situation they find themselves in?
You know, I don't know when it happened, but I do know that at one time, all of our constables had some background in law enforcement.
They were former retirees.
Yeah,
from law
retired cops that had 20, 30 years behind them. And because let's face it, that is just a really tough job. We're asking them to go serve paperwork on people who don't want that paperwork, or in this case, the evictions. I met with the constables after their last incident, and they told me they averaged 20 to 30 eviction notice services a day.
What?
Per constable.
Oh my.
I mean, that's just incredible. And you know, we'll work with them and help them, but you know, I have to be respectful that they are elected officials as I am, and I can only offer certain things, but it really is an elected office that has a lot of autonomy.
But uniformity might really help that
you know,
whole deal.
I have my thoughts on a lot of that, but really, Bill,
uniformity,
like I say,
and starting with the way they're, you know, present them, dress in perhaps a uniform that says constable. Should they have a firearm with them? All these questions.
You're talking to a cop. I'm going to tell you yes, but that doesn't mean that they don't have the right to do it the way they see it. They are elected. I just think that they get their authority through the state legislature, and I hope that someone at the state legislature is looking at this, because it really is up to the state to make the determinations that says how they're trained, what they're trained, how they appear, what they're, you know. Right now, the only thing I can tell them is, if you call us for assistance, backup, we're going to come. Is it going to take a few minutes? Will it take maybe we schedule those things? We can help you as best we can, but everybody, like we know, everybody's shorthanded. Just those kinds of situations are so dangerous. I'd hate to imagine I'm going to take a chance and go to that door and tell this guy he's got to leave his home and not be armed, not have some sort of authority, even if it's what we call command presence. That uniform kind of gives you a little bit of that when you come to the door. You know you're dealing with an official who has some authority.
Is that something that the Sheriff's Department could help with in some regard if they were, if you were
asked?
You know,
we do. So all of their court process is from the courts. They actually work for the courts. That's who they oversees them. And we handle all felony court orders through my civil section. They handle all the misdemeanor court orders, which are just an incredible number for what we have. We say 3 or 4 constables now. I think there's 10 elected positions. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I don't know how they accomplish the work they do.
So their primary responsibility is what? A constable?
Service of court orders.
Service of court orders.
Injunctions, orders of protection, evictions, yeah. Things
just
like that.
Everything that the court comes out with. You know, just throwing out what would I do differently or how would I look at this? The city of Tucson handles their city court, handles their misdemeanors through a contract service with a private process server. Maybe that needs to be looked at for as somehow they manage to do it and we don't hear these tragic things.
My acquaintance and friend, Mary Dorgan, who was a longtime constable,
right.
She told me that in Las Vegas, they elect a constable for the county, one constable. And that constable is sort of like a sheriff who then hires deputies who are sworn officers, I believe, who then carry out the service requirements. So I don't know. When I heard that, I thought, boy, it's a lot easier than finding one qualified person for the county.
Sure,
is a lot easier than finding 10.
And it will probably be harder and harder as people see that, you know, the horrible violence that happened.
Yeah. We lost a number of constables, or at least they took time off, understandably so, after that horrible situation. You know, it's just tragic, and I don't have all their answers for them. I just know that they have a very difficult job, and they probably could use a lot more training, not a little more, a lot more training. And maybe they need some oversight from somebody, but they are elected, and that's going to take the state legislature to change that.
Now, what about response times? This is something personally I hope I never have to call for your services, because I am a Pima County resident. But are response times pretty much staying steady for your people?
You know, they are. I think we do a pretty good job on what we call our priority one calls.
Right.
Those are the major calls. Those responses are, if we can stay under 5 minutes or even at 5 minutes, we're doing pretty well.
Okay.
You know, some agencies can be as high as 10, 15 minutes, which is tough when you're talking about, I need a cop right now. Those are the most dangerous situations. But what we're looking at is, in fact, I'm gonna segue into this if you don't mind, because it's something that just happened. We got a grant. Senator Kelly gave us a lot of push and help, got us a grant for 14 additional school resource officers, because what we've tried to do here in Pima County, we set up the Pima Regional Critical Incident Team and learned how well, even though we're all short, Tucson, us, Moran, Oral Valley, we learned that this can be a force multiplier, that you've got thousands of cops who can deal with this. In looking at what we saw happen in Vivaldi, up in Texas with the schools, we clearly, all of us chiefs sat in the room and said, you know, we got to do something. We got to make sure we're all on the same page. And I think as law enforcement, we have been. We've trained for years together. We put on school training for these active shooter type situations, and all the agencies are involved. But what we didn't do was regionalize it where one of these incidents everybody knows. And you talk about response times. 5 minutes, if you call us for a burglary, 5 minutes, man, that's great. But think of how fast I can pull a trigger and how many times I can pull a trigger in 5 minutes.
That's an eternity.
And you're a little kid at a school. My goodness. We're talking seconds count. So we train our teams to you respond. You can't. It'd be nice if, hey, I'm going to wait for the bar fight. I'm going to wait outside the bar for my backup. Let those knuckleheads tire each other out. Mm-hmm. This is something completely different. You don't wait for backup. You go and address the threat. And if it's one-on-one. Now, we look at also our equipment. How are we equipping our teams? All of the sheriff's department deputies have long rifles, automatic weapon fire, or semi-automatic rifles to confront that kind of threat. But we also recognize that our school resource officers are probably the most, they're going to be there probably
quicker than
anybody.
Well, they're on the front line, we hope. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got them equipped with some long rifles and some, but more to that, we have now partnered. I was actually amazed. Chad Kazmar, Chief Kazmar, and I met with all 11 school superintendents this past summer to talk about this, and all of them are on board. We partnered up with them for a regional approach to securing our schools and making sure that those things are done and that the threat assessments are all the same, they all look alike, and that we're all talking the same thing and on the same page. What's interesting to me was that all of those 11 superintendents who were great men and women and really had some great ideas for us and are working with us, they all said, this is the first time that all 11 of them have been in the same room at the same table.
So these are the 11 for our region.
Yep.
11
the entire valley.
It's the first time they've all sat down together?
Yep. I thought that was amazing. But it's working because now we do have some collaborations. We recognize that, well, schools, first aid kits. You know, my deputies all carry these military IFACs, two of them in their cars, to deal with gunshot victims, things of that nature.
Yeah.
Critical. But the school, what's the nurse got? Aspirins and Band-Aids? So all of this is, we meet with them monthly to sit with our schools and sit with our principals and our teachers and do some training as
is
well
there
as
kind of a
assessment.
Plan to follow up with the, with the school nurse on, that they actually have?
All of
a
this
more
is being
sophisticated
done.
First aid kit that could handle a gunshot.
We're getting to that. Yes. One of the things is of course money. So that grant helps us with that. We're talking to the schools about numbers of what their needs would be and how large that is. And is there something I can do to help fund that? Because our schools aren't anything like us. They're down in funding too.
Yeah.
So the point being is we are working close with our schools to keep our kids safe, and we hope that this kind of regional effort it goes beyond just our schools, our technology. You know, you call a cop, you call 911 in Marana or Oral Valley or TPD or SO, you get different operators. Well, we now have a system in place where we can push a button and every cop on the street knows.
Hears it.
Doesn't matter who you...
sees it.
I live right behind Sabino High School in the middle of this. It's a city school.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's an incident there, it'd be nice if I knew about it.
Yeah.
Or maybe your cop dropping your kids off in the county and you're in the city.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice to know if there's something. So we have put that in play where all of our dispatch centers will be talking to each other. A push of a button, as I say, and every cop in the valley will know what's going on.
All right, Tim, I'm just about out of time. Do you have something else on
your
agenda?
Yeah, quick question. So I enjoyed seeing your commercial, your TV commercial with Katie Hobbs, you and the Santa Cruz County Sheriff.
You need to change your channel.
Yeah. Right? How I enjoy it, I say, because I as I've written in the paper, it took what is usually a Republican frame. And instead, it was a Democrat who was using it. How did you end up doing this border-related commercial with Katie Hobbs?
So first of all, I mean, politically, I'm very much aligned with Katie and believe her to be that she would make a great governor. But putting the politics aside, Secretary Hobbs asked if I would do a commercial for her, and I said absolutely. Yeah, and she's not alone. I think there's other. You know, I constantly tell you I'm not a politician, but we know that's far from true, isn't it? I wish I was more of a cop than I am today. But
are you
but
midway through now your term already, this term?
I'm getting there, yeah.
What are you thinking for the next? Are you still enjoying your work? Or are you going to step aside after this?
No, first of all, I tell everybody who asks me that, look, I have a big job to do right now. Uh-huh. Every day is a big day. We'll just take it a day at a time. I don't need to run on rhetoric. I just need to run on my record. And let's get to 2024,
right,
whatever it is. And then I can say, here's what I've done. If you like me, then you'll support me. If not, that's okay.
You're taking one
day at
a time right now.
Yeah, okay. That's all. We have a lot of work to do. I'm done campaigning.
Yeah.
Let's do our work and our job, and then things will take care of themselves.
Okay, Sheriff Nanos, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you.
All right. Tim, stick around. I've got some things for you.
Sure, will do.
Take a break right here. Be back on The Buckmaster Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Welcome back. Our thanks to Sheriff Nanos, Chris Nanos, coming in. It's been a while since we'd had Chris on our Friday Focus interview, so covered a lot of ground. And Tim Stiller is here with us. And Tim, thank you for taking part in the interview. I think we talked a little bit about what was going on in the jail.
Yep.
And I learned something new, which I try to do every day. The sheriff was saying they went back and checked the records, and the amount of deaths, I think it was last year, 10 deaths in the jail, was a little bit more than, I think he said, 8 was the average over
the
years.
Yeah, I want to verify those stats. That's interesting. It's certainly true that deaths do happen every year in jails. I think that it's not just Pima County Jail. As I've been reading about other places, there have been increased deaths in a lot of jails. But
yeah. Anyway, I want to talk about in your column today, and this has been the focus of our gubernatorial race, the Hobbs Lake race. The focus, this being whether, you know, that Katie Hobbs decided not to go head to head and debate Republican Carrie Lake. I mean, this has been going on for several weeks.
Yeah,
maybe longer.
In late August,
maybe
I believe. Yeah.
I mean, this whole thing over the debate, is it going to cost her, as some have said, 1, 2, maybe even more percentage points?
I mean, yes, but as I think I was thinking this, I think the last time I was on this show, that I think she figures, and this is just my logic supposition here, that it, the result, the effects of her one-on-one debate with the skilled communicator on TV, Carrie Lake, that would have been worse than the criticism she's getting for not debating in the first place.
But it's been the whole focus.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly the focus of news coverage.
What's been the big
yeah.
issue, as far as you're concerned, other than that, in this race?
Yeah, I mean, I would guess that you would say election issues. In other
and
words, the 2020, the question of election denial or performance. I'm getting the candidates confused. Yes, Carrie Lake has said that Katie Hobbs should be arrested, hasn't she?
I don't know if
I'm getting these allegations are proliferating so much I've gotten them all confused. I know that Mark Fincham has said that about Adrian Fontes, so related to elections. Anyway, yeah, I mean, that's the only other issue that I've... Well, no, that's not true. Abortion, of course, has poked, has emerged as a real issue. So... And maybe Katie Hobbs would say border issues. I don't know. But, you know, it's all a question of where people...
With the polling these days, who knows what you can believe. It's so hard to get an accurate polling deal because it used to be the pollsters called landlines.
Right.
Well, nobody calls landlines anymore. And some use a variety of using emails and cell phones. But who knows how accurate these polls are. One thing, generally it looks like all of the top items, candidates at the top of the ticket, it's very close.
Yeah. You know, after 2016, when the polls were proven wrong and Trump won,
yes,
I really took stock a bit of the way I and the others I was reading were reporting and consuming information, and it just really hit home to me that it doesn't matter much what the polls say, that, you know, we will know eventually who wins. So really what matters is, and this is very cliche, but really what matters is just telling the readers, telling the audience, from a journalist's point of view, about the candidates and their positions, you know, and then just let the chips fall. I feel pretty strongly that way. I've written about affordable housing as an issue in the governor's race. I've written about fentanyl as an issue in the governor's race. And I've written about water as an issue in the governor's race. And I haven't written much about the other big issue, or the big talking points, meaning the debate and the debate over debates.
Yeah.
Because, well, I don't know. I just think it's good to take a different approach.
Okay. I've only got, 2 minutes. You talked about this merger, the grocery store merger on Wednesday. I grew up in an area where Kroger was the dominating grocery store. And now they're joining forces with Albertsons.
Yeah, that's the attempt. So
I mean, Kroger's considered, I guess, somewhat a low price leader, as they try to say.
Yeah, I mean, something to that. I don't know. I'm not sure where they fit.
Who knows if that's going to mean
cheaper
prices.
They own all the... Kroger owns the Fry's stores in Tucson and Arizona and I guess, everywhere. And of course, Fry's is a big, one of the biggest grocers in this area. And then the company that Kroger is trying to buy is Albertsons, which owns Albertsons stores as well as Safeway.
Safeway.
So yeah, my point was that I just don't buy that any kind of attempt to spin off stores or that kind of thing will sustain competition. That's something that happened when Albertsons bought Safeway. They tried to spin off a few stores into the Hagen company, and it was a disaster. And frankly, that's what the merged companies want. They want the spun off stores to be weak and turn into a fiasco, because then they don't have the competition. If it's not in their interest to have to prop up a competitor for their newly merged company.
Can you tell us anything about your column for Sunday?
Yeah, I'm writing a new follow up on the killing of Tom Meixner, the UA hydrology professor, and got some new information from more other people at the U of A, and trying to round that into kind of moving this story forward a little bit.
Okay, Tim, I will hopefully have you in studio the day after the election. I don't know how much we'll be able to say such and such won. You may have a lot of people saying, well, I won this election, even though the ballot count
won't be close to
won't be anywhere close
to. Yeah, I mean, we can talk about some
stuff. We'll talk about a bunch of stuff. That'll be the day after the election. Meantime, stay well, okay?
Okay, well, thank you, Bill.
Thank you very much. Take a break right here. Matt Russell with Weekend Watch right after we take a short break.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
time to stir it up, and that means it is the weekend on the Buckmaster Show. We jumpstart the weekend here every Friday at about 12:50. Our weekend watch with Matt Russell, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. I've been talking all week about what a perfect weekend this would be over in Silver City, and the weather folks have backed me up. 70 degrees, 70, 71 degrees at midday over in Silver City as they are enjoying a beautiful autumn day. Good day to get out and do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Maybe visit the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For more on things to do, and there are a lot of things to do, and there are some great places to stay as well, and eat, I might add, in Silver City, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Speaking of eating, let's welcome now award-winning Tucson publicist. He is a dedicated foodie, food and beverage writer, Mr. Matt Russell, the host, the longtime host of Weekend Watch. Matt, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Welcome back home from what looks like a beautiful vacation following your travels along Facebook.
Beautiful up at Banff National Park and Lake Louise. Pretty place. And had some good eating, too, at the Fairmont at the Chateau Lake Louise. So not only was the view five-star, but the food was matched it as well. What do we have going for us here in the city of gastronomy?
Yeah, you know, as we've heard on your show from several of your guests over the last few years, Tucson was the very first city of gastronomy in North America, and there actually is going to be a fun event happening this evening to support that designation for that local nonprofit. So six of Tucson's highest decorated mixologists are going to be competing for your vote at the City of Gastronomy Cocktail Challenge downtown at the Monica on Congress. Now, your $70 ticket includes six sample cocktails, plenty of delicious hors d'oeuvres, and a ballot to vote for your favorite. So the winning mixologist is going to get a big cash prize, and their cocktail is going to be named Tucson City of Gastronomy Cocktail of the Year. Talk about bragging rights. Things get underway at 5:30, so start your weekend with a little cocktailing for a cause.
Can you imagine the creative ingredients that will be going into some of these lovely cocktails?
Just beginning to imagine them. They work like chefs. They're so creative.
What's going on at Barrio?
Yeah, well, they're going to be getting some tails wagging on Sunday from 11 to 4. It's the annual Barks and Brews. Now, this is a dog washing event, which is priced based on the size of your pup. You know, small dogs will run you $15, large dogs $25. You can even add a doggy nail trim for $10 and treat them to some house-made doggy treats, all while you sit back and enjoy some great beer from Barrio. Now, all event proceeds go directly to Friends of Pima Animal Care Center, which supports efforts at the shelter to save the lives of animals in need. So bring those dirty dogs to Barrio Brewing on Sunday on East 16th Street and get them soaped up in style.
We love the Pima Animal Center and all the great work that they do. Big supporters here on the Buckmaster Show. Hey, we've got Halloween right around the corner, a great chance for some folks to dress up.
Yeah, you bet. Getting a head start on Halloween, the Warehouse Arts Management Organization will be hosting a masquerade-themed fundraising gala tomorrow at 5 o'clock at the Firestone Building over on North 6th Avenue. Cirque de Masquerade is going to start with cocktails and some gallery viewing. That's going to be followed by a locally catered dinner, live music. They're going to be doing stand-up comedy, some dazzling circus performances, and the gallery is actually going to be open for the entire event with artwork available for purchase. Many of those artists, Bill, are actually going to be there. So the event is priced at $85 per person. The event will support the organization's Artist Relief Fund. So grab that mask, the Halloween mask, actually, and circ over to the Firestone Building tomorrow night.
Hey, Tucson Foodie was honored, I think, in Best of Tucson, wasn't it?
It sure was. Best local blog. And really, Tucson Foodie is really more than a blog. It really is a digital destination for the local food and beverage scene. And I'm honored, of course, as you and your listeners know, to be among the writers for Tucson Foodie. We really enjoy putting together the content that your listeners value and across the community. So we're really proud of that designation, and thank all the readers of Tucson Weekly for voting for Tucson Foodie.
Have a great weekend. Thank you, Matt.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content of our program. Thanks to everybody here, including Tom Fairbanks at Bustos Media Tucson, for your support. Be well, everybody. Stay safe. Have a lovely weekend.